Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, welcome to another edition of our program, Dare to Be Different. It's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Midway 1548 Satellite Islam, and to those of you on the DSTV 826, and walking the studios this morning of Radio Islam. It's just been a bit of a nip in the air compared to yesterday and Friday. We had some brilliant sunshine, and this morning coming, you can already feel that winter's creeping in. And to those of you that are living in areas where there's lots of trees, you can find trees are shedding their leaves, and we're in to autumn. Yes, are we going to have a sudden snap into winter? I'm not too sure, but definitely there's a crisp cold air in the atmosphere, and you can feel that. And it definitely heralds a different season. I must say too that whilst we're talking about different season, it's a season that has its own beauty. And definitely to those of us that are, you know, been watching this, would be enjoying this particular period. And before we go into the cold of winter, this morning we've got a wonderful guest, and she's been with us many, many times in the past, and that's Sharon from Barefoot Herbs. Hi, good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Ishmael.
Thank you very much. Like I was saying to you, you know, the dip in temperatures, did you find this morning?
Yes, definitely. Here in Joburg, we've got, it's just definitely a nip in the air, and like you say, winter is on its way. But it's still autumn, so we've still got a few more sunny days, I hope.
Well, while you talk, you know, something about our weather, you know, whilst we could have brilliant sunshine for 2 days, and next thing, smack, bang, we could have winter on our doorstep. It's happened to us so often, isn't that right?
That is right, yeah, I know, and it just suddenly, it doesn't do our gardens too much good, but that's one of those things, we have to work with nature, don't we?
No, definitely, and I must say to you that walking around the garden yesterday, I found that we had an infestation of, you know, hawkers and, you know, insects, because we've had the extremities, we've had very hot weather, then we didn't have the rains, and the rains came in abundance, and we had the weather. So that's caused a bit of a havoc. Has that happened to your side as well, Sharon?
Definitely, especially with aphids. We've had so many aphids, which I don't normally have a problem with at all, but it is, I think it's the damp weather, which is ideal for them all to hatch, and then, of course, the heat, and they all are out and really, really happy. So, yes, I've got aphids that the ladybirds can't even cope with at the moment.
What are you using? Is there any particular thing that you're using that's organic? Are you using something that's systemic or chemical?
We don't use chemicals at all. Everything we use is organic. So the best thing to use, obviously, next to ladybirds is you put chili and garlic together. So you can make a strong tea with chili and garlic, but it must be quite strong. So in a liter, you would put 4 tablespoons of crushed garlic and 1 or 2 crushed chilies, and you leave that to brew for about an hour, and then you spray that. It's got to be cold, but you spray that onto the plants. Anything with organic, obviously, it doesn't stay there for long, so you have to do it every day.
Okay, so you've got to do it continuously.
Yes. Organic stuff doesn't stay on the plants forever. It's organic, so it goes into the air, and nature just takes its course. Nature wants the aphids, that's the problem.
Well, thank you very much. Now, before we continue any further, tell us, you know, you've come in and you've seemed to have gone on a fantastic journey. You used to be, you know, an avid gardener, and I know you still are. You're doing lots of herbs, but you've shown gone to something different, or is it something that you would call complementary?
Definitely something complementary. As you say, I used to have the small holding, in fact, the street next to where I am now, and grew a lot of herbs and taught a lot. And then I had this opportunity, you know, I've been in catering for a long time as well, and I had an opportunity in July last year to open a restaurant. And it's something I've dreamt about all the time for years and years and years. And it's an outside. We're in gardens. It's beautiful. I've got plants growing everywhere. I've got herbs. We put vegetables in. And we are outside all the time. So it really is definitely dovetails in with the herb business. And, you know, the Barefoot Herbs has been my herb business for years. So the restaurant's been called Barefoot Kitchen. So definitely the two tie together. So hopefully you'll come and visit us one of these days.
Definitely will. And when you talk about, you know, the herbs in the restaurant, so from what I do understand, that you'll be having everything that's, you know, crisp and fresh, that's taken from your garden and into your restaurant. Would that be the idea?
Yes, definitely. And every week we're also having, on the weekends, we'll have a herb of the week. And the sheets are actually on the tables. And we have a special. Like this week is coriander. And so we've got the specials of the week. We're doing a chicken breast with coriander pesto. We've got grilled hake with lemon and coriander. And then we've got the Thai chicken and sesame salad, which is obviously also with coriander. And then at the bottom of that, to give you a little bit of barefoot, but so just a little bit of information on that herb. And I find people are really enjoying that because many people don't understand that a herb is more than just cooking. They don't realize you can use it for medicine as well. And so when they read that, they say, oh, wow, I didn't know that. Let me try some. So, yes, I'm educating people at the same time as feeding them.
I think that's a fantastic idea, and I know that this is a trend very much in Europe, and I know, I'm not too sure how it's caught up here in South Africa, but people come in and, take from the garden straight, and then, the chefs would then make magic with their whatever they, vegetables and herbs they have, and people would enjoy that.
That's it, and it tastes so much better if you're buying it and you know it's grown organically, and it's coming, it's not even an hour old when it goes into your meal. It's definitely a different taste if you buy something from a greengrocer or the market or wherever you're buying it from, and it sat there for probably a day, and it was another day in transport, and so it is at least 3 days old when you eat it, and the flavor goes. And, of course, you don't know whether those have been grown organically or they've been grown with chemicals. So it definitely does give a different taste.
And when we talk about this, and there's been also that great move in the last couple of years about food security and, so people wanting to know exactly what they're eating, what has been, put away, what has gone into, harvesting this particular plant and so forth. So there's a great interest, and people have now gone into growing their own. Do you find that happening all the time?
I do, and people are definitely interested. I think I've said to you before, when I studied, it was 97 to 2000, and people weren't that aware then of the dangers of the chemicals that are in your food. And now people have become more and more aware, and more people are saying, I want to know exactly what's in there. And you can see the big fight they've had worldwide against Monsanto. The people are just not happy anymore to have those chemicals. We see all the diseases, we see all the illnesses, and I think eventually people are realizing it's because it's what we're putting into our bodies, not because of anything else. It's not just a sudden influx of cancers and respiratory problems. It's definitely something we're feeding ourselves.
So
and
true.
And people are growing. It's nice. People are growing stuff even in their pots. If they're in a townhouse or in an apartment, they're still growing herbs and some plants in plant pots. That's fabulous.
And it's so true, and you spoke about Monsanto, and the people now, sort of rebelling and saying we don't want to this type of thing, and the illnesses that come up and so forth. So there is definitely that great move, and we find that people are saying we need to take care of this, we need to take care of the environment, take care of our bodies, and I think this is what is so important about this particular movement. And every time, we come to almost April, May, when we go into Chelsea, we find that, when we look at what comes out there, for the last 5 or 7 years, trends haven't changed. It's still about food security and how we can do, how best we can protect the environment and our bodies.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I also think a lot of people are going in the vegetarian route. I mean, I've been vegetarian for years and years, but when I was, it was a little bit odd to be a vegetarian. Now we have more and more people who are becoming, in the Western world especially, becoming vegetarian, and it's not a normal for them. But they are becoming it, I think, because they realize how many chemicals are in meats. And meats, I think, have got more than even vegetables.
Definitely. And when you talk about, just quickly, take us something. What's the difference between the vegetarian and the vegan? Would there be a very big difference in that? Or would it, I'm just trying to get that for our listeners.
I'm a vegetarian. Vegetarians will still eat things like eggs and cheese. They will still eat certain animal products as long as the animal hasn't been harmed. So, if a chicken lays an egg, it's not going to be harmed. So you get milk and you make cheese. It's not hurting an animal. Whereas a vegan won't take anything at all that is from an animal. So they wouldn't take milk or eggs or cheeses or yogurt or even honey. They won't take anything that's come from an animal. And the thing with that, I've tried it, but it's very difficult. It's difficult to get you've got to be very careful how you eat because you've got to make sure you still get your protein in, and that's a big problem.
Yeah,
so
I think
for me, I'm vegetarian, it's easier.
But I do understand because, once I went and somebody said, I'm vegan, I said, well, what does it mean, when you look around it and, you find that it's difficult because where would you get the extra source of protein and so forth? And I think that's a big challenge around this.
Yeah, it is.
Now,
you know, you have to definitely combine your meals properly. So you've got to have your pulses and grains and, you know, things like that. And, you know, I don't know if I want to have beans and rice for every meal. That's not possible.
Well, and I must say, you must be very creative in the kitchen as well, because, you know, to make something that's palatable and that looks good, and I think that's where the challenge is.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, and there's also that, you know, blurring of lines between herbs and vegetables, because sometimes you find a veg that could be classified as a herb and many herbs could be classified as vegetables. Is that true?
It is, but it's the same as some fruit can be classified as vegetables, like a tomato is classified as a vegetable, but actually it's a fruit. And so are avocados, also classed more of a fruit, but they are, I mean, more of a vegetable, but they are actually fruits as well. So there's a very fine line between everything. If you're eating the seeds from a basil plant or coriander, that's our herb of the week. Coriander, you're eating the seed as well. So is it a seed? Is it a herb? Or is it a fruit?
Yeah, I think those lines are definitely blurred. And then, you know, carry on. Please do carry on.
Yeah, no, they are definitely. And you just have to say, all right, well, it's something from the garden. I think that's the end of the day. It's something good for me.
Well, that's so difficult. I think those are the challenges. Now, you know, we've also had the tragic passing on of the doyen of herbs, and, you know, something that personality who was not only for South Africa but for the international community, and that has been Margaret Roberts. She's done some fantastic work on herbs. And do you find that that contribution is going to be lost?
I think so. Although she has written a lot of books, and I'm sure her daughter is going to carry on her legacy. But she left a lot of her knowledge with us because she did write so many books. And I find especially useful are the ones she wrote on our indigenous herbs, because there's not a lot written on South African herbs or African herbs, and we have got a huge wealth of those. So at least she has left her knowledge with us, so we can appreciate her for that. And like I say, I'm sure the herb farm will continue and her daughter will carry on.
Just with a conversation with her when I had a couple of years ago, one of the things that I know that she spoke about was that just not only herbs from South Africa, whilst that was fantastic, she did that, but she also brought in, you know, herbs from other parts of the world, which were sort of nondescript. People didn't know about them, and she gave them prominence, and thereafter people had done lots of research. And I think that had been something that she really worked at, making people aware, bring about that awareness. And I think she gave it sort of, she glamorized, if that's the right word to use, you know, that herbs were not something that had to be put into the back garden or something, but she said they were so important and they were part of our lives, and they could be used both in culinary as well as medicinal uses.
Yeah, definitely. And I think people often, if you mention herbs, then they think of things like parsley and sage and coriander and, you know, the normal culinary herbs, but they don't think that things like nasturtium, which is a pretty plant in the garden, or even a rose bush, is also a herb. And those things we have around us, and a lot of the weeds as well, chickweed and centella, those things are classed as, you know, a nuisance most of the time, but they're very, very good herbs medicinally. And that is what she bought, I think, and like you say, not so much glamorized it, but brought it to the front, made it common knowledge as opposed to something that's just hidden away that only a few people know.
Thank you very much for that. And, you know, now when you talk about herbs, many people sort of look at the Mediterranean herbs or the pizza herbs and say, well, those are the herbs we understand and know, and that would be parsley, sage, oregano, marjoram, rosemary, and chives. Is that true?
Yeah. I think people are more aware now, and even in culinary circles, they are taking more of a chance and hearing more about herbs. So, you know, years ago, you knew basil as basil, where now all the other different varieties of basil are being used. We're using lemon basil and thyme basil, Thai basil and the holy basil. We're using all of those, which is so nice, because originally we only knew sweet basil. So there are, and thymes as well, there are so many varieties that it's a pity we didn't use them all before, but now people are getting to know them, and that is fabulous. Even our own indigenous Tolbachia, which is the wild garlic, I find I've been to restaurants and they're using the flowers and the roots for culinary purposes. And that's fabulous, because we are using it now, not just having them in the garden. People are aware that it's not just a pretty thing to have in your garden. In fact, most of your garden can probably be used as a herb some way or other.
You know, just as you mentioned the Tolbachia, I was going to ask you about that. You know, that's such an underrated herb, and people have, like you said, neglected it, and now it's come to the fore. Tell us something about its uses Has it got both medicinal and culinary uses, or only culinary?
No, it has got, well, it's got all sorts of things. It's very, it was one of the most useful things to have in your garden, especially if you've got a vegetable garden, because it repels insects. And it looks so pretty. It's one of those things that you can have in your garden. It doesn't take a lot of space. So if you put it, obviously it will multiply, and you can always divide it up and give it to friends if you want to. But as a insect repellent, it is really one of the best things. And then culinary, you choose it like a spring onion. And you either cook it, you know, you can pull the little bits away, you can cook it like that, and use the flowers as well. And then because it's part of a garlic type of plant, it's got a lot of the same chemicals as garlic, which makes it very good for respiratory problems. So if you have a sore throat or you have a chest infection, you can make a tea or you can gargle with it. And that way it is good.
And of course, you know, it makes a wonderful border plant. I've seen this, you know, where people sort of, you know, have and in the gardens, and they use it as a border, and they have lots yep. and lots of them, and it looks such stunning ones, because especially when the flowers, you know, the purple flowers are in bloom.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. And the other thing is, because it's an indigenous plant, it doesn't need too much care. It's very happy to grow whether it's raining or the sun is shining and doesn't get too much water. It doesn't really mind. It'll carry on growing and be very happy about that. And whereas, obviously, your Western herbs, which are used to a lot of water, you have to really care for a lot of them.
Now, in terms of the color, is it only the purple one, or is there a white one as well?
There are several. There's, I think, a couple of hundred. And funny enough, I was dealing with a lady who lived in Wales, of all places, and she was the top Tolbachia collector in the world. And she was telling me there was a couple of hundred of the Tolbachias. But like most things, you use the original for medicinal purposes. But there's a fragrant one as well, Tolbachia fragrance. And that one smells beautiful. You would never think it was a Tolbachia because it's got nothing like garlic. And then there's white ones and there's large ones. There's one that grows to 1.5 meters high now. And that's really beautiful. But again, they're hybrids that you wouldn't really be using for culinary purposes.
And whilst you say it's indigenous, is it endemic to a particular part of South Africa, or is it widespread?
It's widespread throughout South Africa. I think even up to Zimbabwe as well, you'll find it. So it's not an endemic one. Endemic ones are things like the wild ginger. That's endemic to KwaZulu-Natal. But no, wild garlic you will find all over the place, quite happily.
Okay, so whilst you're speaking about Tolbachia, any other indigenous herb that you know of that would do well besides the Tolbachia?
Well, yes, the wild rosemary is another one that's very popular. It's also known as a kapok plant as opposed to the kapok tree because the flowers have that, once they burst open, they look like little balls of cotton wool. And that one you can use. You can use it the same way as you'd use rosemary, but it is quite a lot stronger, and it's got a little bit more of a wild, I suppose, is the best way to describe it, a wild taste. But you can put it with a lot of different foods, the same as you'd use rosemary. Good with potatoes, good with chicken. You know, if you're a meat eater, you can put it with a lot of meat as well. But it's a rosemary. It is called wild rosemary, and that is one you can use. And then, of course, you've got bulbine, which is an indigenous succulent, and that is excellent as a medicine because if you use that on mosquito bites or burns, it's like our own indigenous aloe vera. So that's also a good one to have in the garden.
We're going to go for a short ad break. When we come back, we'll continue. Thanks.
Okay, super. Thanks Ishmael.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program Dare to Be Different, and it's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming midway 1548 Satellite Islam and on the DSTV 826. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest. Many of you are still curled up in bed, others having breakfast and perhaps even preparing breakfast. A wonderful time to add some of those herbs to those breakfast dishes that you are preparing. We're talking about herbs and its uses, and Sharon is helping us along with that. Hi, good morning, Sharon.
Yes, Ishmael.
Thank you very much. Like I said, some of them are still busy preparing breakfast. What do you suggest we put into breakfast with herbs?
Oh, well, if you're making scrambled eggs, the best thing is chives. I love chives and scrambled eggs. But you could also put parsley in. And most of it depends how strong you want your breakfast to be. You know, this time if you've been up a couple of hours, maybe you don't mind if it's a little bit spicier. and you can put something like chili in there. Tomatoes and chili are fabulous. And so, yeah, you can just use your imagination. But I think if my favorite would be definitely scrambled egg and chives.
Thank you very much. And if you'd like to join our conversation, number to dial this morning, 854-1548. Sharon, now let's look at some of the other herbs that we have and found that they seem to have come back. You know, lots and lots of people are using them for different things. The basil, tell us something about basil.
Basil, it's one of my favorite herbs. And for an uplifting smell, I don't think you can beat it. generally known as being used with Italian cooking, but you can use it with a lot of other things. It goes really well with fish and vegetables and, you know, all the milder things. It competes a bit, meat is a bit too strong for it, I think, but you can definitely use it with potatoes. It's really good with carrots, and if you're making a tomato sauce, it's lovely. But medicinally, it is known as an uplifting herb, and you can drink the tea, and you can just have it close to you. Like I say, it smells so wonderful. You feel like sunshine as soon as you smell it. And we have it actually in the restaurant. We've got pots of it around, so people sit down and they can brush it, and it's beautiful.
Now, you know, it's also that time of the year that many of the herbs will be dying off, and we're going to be harvesting. Tell us something about how do you harvest some of these herbs.
Yeah, it's a perfect time now to be harvesting, and, well, basil, since we were talking about that, is probably one of the more difficult ones because it's got a lot of water content and it doesn't dry very well. You lose a lot of the flavor if you dry it. So the best way to preserve it is either by making a pesto where you can mince it. You don't even have to put the nuts in if you just want to preserve it. Just mince it, chop it up finely and pour some olive oil over it. Or otherwise you can freeze it, but you have to put it into, chop it up and put it into ice trays and pour water over. Then obviously you're not going to have the texture, but you will still get that flavor because it's frozen. If you just straight freeze it, it goes black. Then it still tastes fine, but it looks terrible. So those are the two ways I would definitely preserve it.
Now there's another herb. Shall I carry on? Please do carry on.
No, a lot of the other herbs you can do exactly the same. It's probably the easiest way to do it. Although you can dry things like sage and oregano. And autumn is the best time because that's when the flavors are the strongest. So if you want to dry your things, you literally cut a few pieces off, lay them onto a flat basket, and they'll dry. Once they're dry, you put them into a glass container, and that's it. You've got them for the whole winter.
You don't have to, you know, sort of put them into a dark room and, you know, sort of things like that?
No, they keep better in dark, but I think the more important is to have them into a glass container because otherwise they absorb the plastic. But if you take your herbs, the worst place to keep them is next to the stove. And you see so many, especially in the magazines, you see they've got the spice rack next to the stove. But then, of course, they've been destroyed by heat. So the best thing is to keep them in a cupboard, a dark cupboard, and then they're in the dark so they're not losing any color or any flavor.
Okay. Now, when we talk about, you know, different herbs, one of the herbs that I find has been, you know, people are using more and more, but perhaps not getting the full use, and that's the stevia. Tell us something about stevia.
Okay, stevia has definitely come into its fore, and I think because so many people have realized that sugar is so bad for us, so sugar, as they've said, is another drug, as bad as any of the other drugs that are on the illegal market. So sugar people are trying to stay away from. I agree, it is addictive. There's nothing better than a chocolate bar. So what people are doing is using the stevia, and like you say, not in a herbal form so much as a powder form. But it's not hard to grow. In fact, it's very easy to grow. It will stay in your garden. It's quite a pretty white flower when it does flower. So you can even put it into your flower beds. And the easiest way to use it is actually to take two or three leaves, pour boiling water over it, and keep it next to your kettle. So when you want to make tea or coffee, you just take a teaspoon of that water and pop it into your tea or coffee, and there you are, it's sweetened. It's very, very sweet.
Okay.
You can actually chew a leaf. But yeah, it's easy. Everybody could be growing it quite easily.
So you could use it, you know, so you put two or three of these leaves into a cup, and then you just pour boiling water,
yeah.
And then you could use that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can just leave it. It's not always, you know, when you make a herb tea, it's best to change it every day. But once your stevia is growing, you're going to have leaves there forever. So you just make a little pot of sugary water, and you can add it to other things as well. You know, it's obviously not going to have the same for the properties sugar has for baking, because you need the sugar simply to make the cake. But you can put it into other things. Like if you want to make fruit, a baked fruit, you can always sprinkle some of that water on top, and there you are. You've got it. The sweetness is there.
You don't have to sort of necessarily dry it and then, you know, sort of powder it and, you know, then utilize it. Would that be good?
You can do that. And this time of the year, you can also dry stevia quite easily, exactly the same way as I said about other herbs. You just lay the leaves out and they'll dry. And you can sprinkle them. The only thing that I find with that is you don't really want to have green bits floating in your tea.
I must say that sometimes I find there's a bit of an aftertaste. Is that true?
It does, but I think any of these sugars that aren't, you know, the artificial sugar, the white sugar and brown sugar that we know so well, they all do have. Even if you have sugar cane, it's also got a bit of an aftertaste. So, but you get used to it quickly. It doesn't take long.
Thank you very much for that one. And someone has made inquiry about licorice-flavored herbs. Do you know of any licorice-flavored herbs?
The which herb?
Licorice, you know, licorice-flavored.
Yes, licorice is another very good herb. It's not the easiest to grow. It needs quite a damp soil, and it needs to, because you're using the root, you're not using anything else. And it's, as you know, it grows very well because it is moist. And the best way is in a pot. And then you dig up the roots also in autumn, sort of towards the end of the autumn, and dry them. That's another thing that's very, very sweet, but obviously it has the licorice flavor as well.
And do you know what the name of that particular plant would be, Sharon?
It is. It is called licorice.
Okay. And is it freely available?
I think in Natal you can get it. I used to have a plant here which I actually bought from Maritzburg, but it died. So that's not very good for me, but it did die. I think it was just too dry. And so it's probably easier to get in Natal than it is to get here in Joburg.
Okay. The other one someone's queried about is a turmeric. You know, he's got turmeric bulbs and he's now grown them, and you know, the leaves have come up. How do you use turmeric as a bulb?
Turmeric, yeah. Turmeric is also well known, obviously, for curries and things. And I've also got turmeric growing in my garden, and it's very much like ginger. So you would only lift it when the flower, when the leaves die down, which will be probably August, end of August, September, and then you will lift it, obviously keep a piece for next year's growth, and then you use it like you use, you can make a powder, but using it fresh like you use ginger is fabulous. It really is a nice way to use it because you get that freshness. It's not quite so, sometimes you get that aftertaste of turmeric, and turmeric has been found as well as very good for prostate cancer. So it's far easier to take a little bit of grated turmeric, fresh turmeric, and have that as it is to have the powder.
And
that's how you would use it.
And you can't use the leaves, can you?
You only use the rhizome.
Okay, it's just the rhizomes
exactly
that you use.
Exactly the same, yeah. Exactly the same as ginger. In fact, the two of them, I've got mine both next to each other, and they're very happy. They're in a bit of shade. They get a lot of water. They're in pots, and they get a little bit of sort of semi-shade. And then that's fine. They're quite happy.
I mean, how tall does it, you know, the plant become? You know, because I've seen some of the leaves already. You know, they seem to be about maybe.
No, they're maybe a meter high.
Okay, it does it. So a meter, that's fine. Okay.
Yeah, probably if they're growing in their own, in where they originally come from, they probably grow taller. But here we seem to have them about a meter, not too much more.
They're
beautiful leaves. They're actually very pretty. So you can have it even on your soup.
Well, the leaf, is that the leaf?
Yeah, the leaf. Well, you have the whole plant in a pot on your stoop. Okay. You know, then you're looking after it nicely because you can see when it needs a bit more water. And it is fairly attractive to have there. So my ginger is also ginger and turmeric are on the stoop area. And then I never forget them.
And you're talking about ginger. And what about garlic? You know, is that also time or is it too late? Or is it past the time to grow?
It's too late now. You should actually be harvesting it soon. Garlic is like onion, so it takes about 9-10 months before it's ready. And you can get the different kinds. The only problem is you've got to get them from somebody who's selling a growing garlic, because the garlic that we get, the ones you get in the supermarkets and the greengrocers, has been radiated, so it won't grow.
Okay.
And you'll see, you know, you can buy onions sometimes and they're sprouting, but you'll never ever find garlic that's sprouting. And if you do, you take it home, you don't eat that one, you go home and you plant it.
Okay, that's the secret, because many people are saying, how do you plant garlic, where do I get it? And I'm not too sure if we can really do that,
yeah.
But like you said, you've got to be on the lookout.
Yeah, you really do. But some of the seed suppliers do keep it, and you just buy it, but it's just quite pricey. And it also needs a lot of water, and you plant it pretty much the same with onions. And you put on some bone meal, so you put in the cloves, put on bone meal, put on some topsoil, water it, keep on watering it, and 9 months later, like a baby, it will be ready.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. Tell us about garlic. You know, there's so many myths around garlic, so many. You know, the one that I love is the one that says the garlic, I beg your pardon, about ginger, the one that says the ginger root runs away, and I'm not sure what they meant by that, but they say once you plant the ginger and the root, I don't know, can you help us about ginger?
Well, ginger is a fabulous herb as well. I mean, I just love ginger. I love the flavor of it. I love cooking with it. And it's very, very versatile. And medicinally, it's great. It's excellent for circulation. So if you have arthritis problems or rheumatism, then you drink ginger tea. And you don't go and buy these little sachets of ginger with the sugar in. You just simply take a piece of ginger, you make a slice off it and pour boiling water over it. And you can drink that. I'm happily to drink it all day long. It does get strong. By the evening, it's quite a strong, potent tea. But I don't mind it. If you're drinking it all day, it's fine. But otherwise, you just make a fresh cup every time. And you can have it 3 or 4 times a day. And it's also good for your digestive system and for your respiratory system. So if you are feeling a bit down and you don't know what's wrong, have some ginger tea. It'll probably perk you up quite well.
Somebody just sent a message that, you know, in India they use the turmeric and make a golden milk. I'm not too sure, but I know they take, they says take fresh turmeric and you boil it with milk, yeah. And that's what they use. Have you heard of that remedy?
I've heard of it, but obviously here we haven't been able to get turmeric in South Africa very easily for a long time. It's only really been available even in shops now. So I've heard of the turmeric milk, the golden milk, but making it with the dried turmeric. And yeah, it doesn't taste bad. It's because I can think of things that are better, but it's not too bad. You know, if you're ill, at the end of the day, medicines, they do say, my grandmother always said, if the medicine doesn't taste bad, it's not going to work. So there we go.
Yes, yes, I know. There's a thing that it says that, you know, it goes something like that. If it's not bitter, it's not helpful.
That's right, yeah. Although now they just stick sugar into everything, so you don't know what's supposed to be bitter and not. But yep, you're supposed to take it in the raw form, and it should be bitter, and then you're fine.
Now we're getting to winter, and you know, what herbs do you suggest that we plant for winter?
Yeah, the herbs that I always say, even with eating, you should actually always eat what is in season. And because we import stuff from all over the world now, you never really know whether things are in season or not. But if you look around and you find the things are cheap, the vegetables and the fruits and even the herbs are cheap, then you're pretty much guaranteed that it's because it's in season locally and it's not costing a fortune. Like strawberries at the moment, I think you're paying 40 rand a packet. So we know they're not in season, because when they are in season, you can get them for 10 rand a packet. And so the herbs you will grow, obviously the indigenous herbs will pretty much go through, and Mediterranean herbs also are fairly good through winter. So you can still put in your oregano and your thymes and sages. And the ones you don't really have growing are the things like the softer herbs, like basil, the ones that are going to get by frost. So those are the ones that you wouldn't be planting and you wouldn't be harvesting. But the other things, the tougher things are. And then, obviously nature is wonderful. The things like oregano and garlics, which are going to be pulled up in winter, and onions even, all those things that come up, and like the lemons, are all the ones that we need in winter for our immune systems. So you'll be pulling up garlic, you'll be digging up and harvesting ginger, and those are the ones you need, because they are the ones for the respiratory problems and the aches and pains that we mainly get in winter. And garlic is an antibiotic, so you'd be using that, coughs, colds, and circulation problems. And then the vitamin C obviously comes from your citrus fruit. So Mother Nature is great. Even your pumpkins and butternuts and the squashes and potatoes are winter harvested foods. And that's when we need them. We need that carbohydrate to keep us warm. So we just got to listen to nature and then we'll be fine.
You know, you spoke early on and there's a call that some query coming with regard to coriander. Tell us something about the medicinal use of coriander.
coriander is also, it's a bit like ginger. It's a stimulant and it will help your circulation. Anything with coriander, well, people either love it or they loathe it. It's not one of those herbs that you can have, it's not too bad. But it's a very good preservative as well. And most people know it through biltong. And for anything, you can preserve with it. It is a bit strong. I find the leaves are fine for cooking vegetables, vegetarian meals. I do find the seeds are a bit strong. They overpower your other foods. But it's very good for your digestive system. So if you do have something, I think that's probably why it's served with things like curries, because you can get indigestion from spicy food, and you'll use those ones. Again, you can use it for insect bites. You just rub the leaves onto insect bites. They have said, and I have seen, that it's good as a face mask, but I don't know if I'd want crushed coriander all over my face. I don't think I'd smell too good afterwards. I just think of all that smell going into your pores, and I think, no, I'll give that one a miss. There are other things you can take for that.
What about a tea? Could you make a tea out of this? Would be a taste. I'm not too sure what the tea.
Yeah, again, you can make a tea, but again, it's the flavor of it.
Yeah, it's too intense. I think the taste is too intense from what I understand.
I think so. Yeah, for me, it's a bit too intense. It's nice with yogurt on top of curries, and it's nice chopped into your root vegetables especially, and even chopped into a salad. I do like it like that. And you can make a pesto with it as well, and you can do a pesto exactly the same way as you make a basil pesto, which is obviously the one we all know. And it's really good if you put coriander and olive oil with cashew nuts. And they're obviously cheaper than pine nuts. But if you mince the whole lot together, it really gives a nice flavor. And then you can eat that all the way through winter. Then you've got that herb.
I know, once I experimented and I had it on a cheese sandwich and I found it was fantastic. And I don't know.
Yes.
Everyone
yes.
doesn't like it. Like I said, the intensity, but I put it on cheese and tomato and you
yes.
put a whole lot of the leaves and I found it was just something different.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly what we should be doing with herbs, is experimenting. So you took some, you probably had some around and you put it in with cheese and you really enjoyed the taste. That's the only way we can find that we like the things, because some of these herbs aren't things that we know. And so what do? You're not going to, you can't always find them in recipe books, and who's got time? So if you can find, this looks really good, or that's, I've got it in my fridge, let me put it onto something and see how it tastes. But another one that goes really well with nasturtiums is, with cheese, is nasturtiums.
Okay.
And a lot of people have nasturtiums in their garden. If you chop up those leaves and put them in instead of lettuce, it also goes very well with cheese and tomato.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the color, so when looking, you find the green and the red and the yellow, and it was just such a striking combination. I really enjoyed it. And I said, well, something I don't know if people would use it, but I definitely found it was enjoyable.
Yeah, perfect. You could probably even do it in the caprese salad, where you have mozzarella, cheese, and tomato, and normally basil. You could do coriander instead.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. Like you said, if anyone's out there wanting to experiment, there's lots of things you could do. And finally, we're coming and, there's a lot of the root plants that we could be using. Tell us about radish.
Radish is another herb fruit, vegetable, salad, whatever you want to call it. It grows really quickly. If you plant the seeds, you're going to be eating them in 2 weeks' time. So it's really a nice thing to grow, and especially for kids, because they see something coming up so quickly. And the flavor is very peppery. You get several different kinds of radish. You also get the Japanese daikon radish, which is very strong, but I like it. Stir fries is excellent, and obviously salads, that's mainly how we know it. But if you stir fry it, it's especially in a bit of butter or a bit of ghee, it makes it sweeter. So you have that peppery flavor, but not quite so, doesn't hit you so hard. That's what I'm trying to say. But in salads, it's great, and that's something you can put on your cheese sandwich too.
And the leaves could also be used as correct.
Yeah, the leaves can be used. They do get a little bit tough, so you'd have to eat them before the fruit is ready, before the radish itself is ready, because I do find they're a bit too chewy.
And finally, we come to the Chinese herbs, and that's something that's, become quite fashionable. Are you doing a lot of that?
They're nice to grow. You get all the leaf ones, and they're very good as well. But we don't tend to do so many of those. I have planted them in the past and used them, but I just don't know enough about them, and definitely not medicinally. I don't know enough about them, but you do. You get the bok choy and well, I don't even know, choy is entitled and whatever they are.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Sharon. It was excellent talking to you. One of these days, I'm going to be taking a drive out to see what it looks like there. But you take care. Everything is the best. Before we, would you just tell us quickly where you're situated?
Okay, we're in Mulvestrift at the Ingwenya Glass Village, and it's very close to the R28. But you will see the signs if you're going along Bayers Nordea, and just before the R28, you'll see the signs to get here. Of course, you can always just go onto Facebook. We've got a Facebook page. Or contact me at Sharon at barefootkitchens.co.za.
And would you be selling lots of your herbs as well, Sharon, or are you just doing the restaurant?
At the moment, it's just restaurant, but we are looking at doing talks every Wednesday, workshops on Saturdays, and growing herbs. We do have a market here because it's a little village, so there's quite a few shops here. And the first Sunday of the month is we have a market, and there's people growing and selling herbs. They sell some vegetables, we sell cheeses and obviously other gifts and things, but that's quite a nice thing to come to because it's very, there's live music which is in the background and it's just lovely. You're sitting in a garden. What could be nicer on a Sunday?
So it's the first Sunday of every month and it's
Sunday every month, yeah. That's okay. When the market is, and every other day we're here except for Monday. So you can come in for breakfast, for lunch or for a late afternoon tea.
And then, the directions again?
Okay, you go out on the Bayers Nordea until just before the R28 and you turn right. It's on the corner of Bayers Nordea and the Diepsloot Road, which is the R114.
Okay. And you open up to?
We open from Tuesday to Sunday, 8 o'clock till 4 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you very much. You take care. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. It was wonderful catching up with you again, and we'll be chatting to you. You take care. Thanks,
okay.
Sharon.
You too. Thanks, Michelle. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Sharon from Barefoot Herbs, giving us some wonderful insights into different herbs that we can use. And I must say that she's always so knowledgeable, always ready to share. And she's taken her passion of gardening into food, and she seems making a success of it. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.